we think we're the exception, but we're not. We're keeping up with the Joneses, and then we're on the hamster wheel, and it feels like we're never getting ahead, and then we're working harder, and you know, it just really becomes the trap. And the trap for those that are high performers, especially, they were kind of taught that it's high performance at all costs. And success is all in how well we perform in business or with our jobs. And as long as we can figure out that business slash money slash job slash high income piece, we're good to go.
Summer is almost here, and we're bringing back our free 7-day challenge again. So it's starting on June 8th. Let me tell you, our best clients, they've lost up to 5 pounds in just 1 week. No crazy diets, no insane workouts, nothing like that. But here's the thing. If you want to be considered, you need to go to legendarylifepodcast.com/challenge and apply today. We only have 50 spots available, and we're only going to let people who are serious about results join the challenge. And in this challenge, I'm going to teach you how to build your plate for rapid fat loss, how to build a strong body with a simple 10-minute workout, how to recover so that you can wake up energized and ready to dominate your day. But I want to be clear again, this is for people who are serious. Last time, I had to kick people out of the group because they weren't serious. So only if you're serious. If you're serious about making a change in your body, in your life, in your energy, in your health, this is for you. This is an opportunity for me to coach you. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, legendarylifepodcast.com/challenge. Go apply for a spot today, and looking forward to seeing you in the challenge. What's up, my friend, and welcome back to the Legendary Life Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Rice, coach to entrepreneurs, executives, and other high-performing professionals. And today's episode, I'm super excited to present to you our guest, Christina Wise. Now, Christina is a real estate mogul, millionaire coach, and creator of several businesses. But the real reason that I had her on the show today is because I watched Christina talk at the event for my business coaching group, and she rocked not just my world, but the world of everybody in the room. And there were a lot of successful people in that room, let me tell you. And what she brought was the intersection between health and wealth. And that's something I'm so passionate about, because so many of us will talk about macros and exercise and calories and eating clean, but we won't address how our financial life creates stress and takes away from our health, or causes us to not take action on our health. And if you feel like either you're a high performer, you're running a business, and you're not sure how to fit in time to take care of yourself, you're going to want to hear Christina's story, because she ended up in a really bad place because she was focused on making money to the exclusion of her health. And if you're a person who maybe you're struggling financially a bit, and you feel like you can't take action on your health because you get too stressed with your finances or with your career, you're also going to take away a lot from the episode with Christina. So she is an incredible speaker. She rocked this episode. So without further ado, let's jump into the conversation with Christina Wise. Christina Wise, thank you so much for being on the show today. This is going to be one of my favorite interviews for a while. I watched you speak on stage at Champ Dev Live, an event that I recently attended, and you just shook the room with your information, with your mindset, with what you were teaching us. So I talked a little bit about you at the beginning of this episode, but can you just briefly talk about who you are and what it is that you do?
Yeah, I guess to keep it short and simple, it's like when you say you're a high performance coach when it comes to health and wellness, I'm a high performance coach when it comes to money, finance, and wealth creation. And I really teach high income earners how to turn their income into long-term lasting passive income and net worth wealth.
Yeah. And we're going to dive into that and what it means and why someone who's making a lot of money might need help from anyone with their money, right? About what to do with their money. And the room full of people that I was with, some very successful people. I know you just really rocked the house with your information. What I want to start off with first is you've got a really kind of crazy story. The reason you transitioned into what you do now is you nearly lost your life back in 2013, and you spent almost $500,000 to get it back. Can you talk about what was that? That's not even something that I think you alluded to on stage, but you really didn't go into depth. I would love to hear that story on how you got started with all this what you do now.
Well, it's funny. I really call that entire journey, it's like the biggest fat lie that we're all like, most all of us are in this subconscious achievement belief of that money will solve all my problems and I need to make more money and I never know how much money is enough. So more is always a better option. And we get stuck in this trap and then we're keeping up with the Joneses. We think we're the exception, but we're not. We're keeping up with the Joneses and then we're on the hamster wheel and it feels like we're never getting ahead and then we're working harder and, you know, it just really becomes the trap. And the trap for those that are high performers, especially, they were kind of taught that it's high performance at all costs. And success is all in how well we perform in business or with our jobs. And as long as we can figure out that business / money / job / high income piece, we're good to go. And the truth is more money causes more problems. And when we don't understand it, it just creates more chaos. So for me, I called myself back then, I was the poster child for peak performance, top producers, achievement, success. I did everything that all the books told me to do, all the podcasters told me to do, all that my mentors told me to do, all my coaches taught me to do. And I was really great at it. And I hit all of my kind of business / financial goals. But I didn't, since that was the only message I was getting all the time, and it wasn't kind of an integrated, holistic message of how to live a good life in an integrated whole way versus just being kind of killing it in one key area, my health was deteriorating. I was just super stressed all the time. I was running marathons and triathlons and just constant peak performance and pushing myself constantly. And I thought I was the picture perfect, you know, example of health. I was running marathons, for goodness sakes, at Boston timing level. So then all of that seemed to work until one day I broke and I couldn't get out of bed and I didn't know what was wrong. And it was a whole story of, kind of a perfect storm of many things that took me to my knees and then some. But ultimately, what I realized is that life isn't about achievement. Life is not about success in one category. Life isn't about the money. Life is about what is a good life. And it's a philosophical question. And that philosophical question is that, what is a good life holistically? You know, you're in the wellness space. I used my body, you know, I'm just, again, another example of I used my health to get my wealth and I had to use all my wealth to get my health back. You know, we've heard that before, and I thought I was immune to it. I thought all the things, but again, like I said, it just broke me down. And what happened in that experience, it was, you know, talk about the dark hero's journey that so many of us have been through. That was mine for sure. But what the biggest, darkest piece of all of that, there were so many scary pieces, fighting for my life, not knowing if I was going to make it, seeing myself deteriorate, seeing what was happening to my family, the whole nine yards, and it just went from bad to worse to worse to worse, is the darkest out of all of that was this amount of grief and regret that I felt, that I was sitting there having to sit with and lie with, that I'm dying, I haven't even lived yet. Because I always thought, when I get there, then I'll enjoy my life. When I get there, then I'll spend my money. When I get there, then I'll have more time to take vacations and do all the things. When I get there, without realizing, I was future tripping all the time. My life was one big future that I was really good at creating the future, but I was never in the present. And I sacrificed almost everything to create a future that when I got there, I wasn't even able to appreciate it. And again, I think my life journey in that example can really represent the kind of pattern that many of us are in without realizing it. And it's just, you know, when I get there, then, and we've heard it a million times, but, you know, that just inspired me to do what I do now of like, oh no, life is more than just peak performance in one category.
Yeah. The I'll be happy when. And what was it that had you on the death, on your deathbed? Was it an illness? Did you contract some like flu or pneumonia or something? What was it that had you there?
You know, mine's an interesting story that it took us 9 months to actually get a diagnosis. Because, you know, I don't know where you sit kind of in the medicine world or the medical world, but I mean, I probably went to 20 doctors and I was just buying my way to try to get a diagnosis. And everyone said, we can't find anything. And in the meantime, I'm deteriorating. My hair is falling out. I can't get out of bed. I literally cannot sleep. I mean, it's, then all my trauma from my childhood started since I wasn't so strong and physically strong to keep it down. Now all that went haywire. So, I mean, it was just this full thing of physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, psychological, everything like blew up at once. I mean, it's like I, you know, stuck my body into a wet socket or something. It's like, zzz, you know, but ultimately from the physical illness piece of all things was heavy metal poisoning. And it's a kind of a long story, but I got my amalgams taken out, my mercury, and it just went straight to my brain, straight to my organs, and started just really wreaking havoc. And I was already, my body, I didn't know at the time, was already pretty toxic. So I got, it was like a toxic overload, you know, but just toxic in all key areas of life, which was pretty interesting. You know, it's, you know, I don't really carry a lot of shame for it now, but there were things that I just realized like, oh my God, I'd created so much toxicity around me, even though I thought I never would have known that at the time. But it was that combined with like stage 3/4 adrenal fatigue. So my hormones were messed up, you know, just stress and adrenals off the charts because always in adrenals, like I lived a high adrenaline lifestyle and didn't realize there was a cost to that. And then all sorts of number of things that kind of cascaded off those two things physically.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, the word that comes up with is stress. The word that comes to my mind is stress, right? Especially with the burnout, or that's kind of what you're describing, the adrenal fatigue. And it's something that it's fascinating because I've read quite a bit about like overtraining with athletes. And one of the things that I ended up reading was how there's this similarity between professional burnout and overtraining with athletes. And certainly, you know, most people who are concerned with overtraining, they're lifting weights like 4 times a week. It's not really a thing. But for endurance athletes, people who are running marathons or triathlons or some of the extreme endurance sports, that's where that starts to pop up. And so I could see how you're pushing yourself with your body, you're pushing yourself in your business, you've got this toxicity thing going on as well, and just the perfect storm of factors that had you feeling like you were about to die. And it's one of the things I try to talk about is like, you're an office athlete, you're an entrepreneur athlete. The source of all your energy, the source of all your ability comes from this vehicle, right? And your sport isn't putting a ball in a net down a field. It's to do a score in a different type of way, a financial type of way. And so I really resonate with that a lot. And I also made that mistake too. And so talk about like, so you're on death's door there. You had this adrenal fatigue and everything that you had mentioned. What was the journey? What was the, and you also said something really important, the regret. Cause if there's one thing, if you like, whatever it is, you party with rock stars and you overdose and you're like, oh, but it was what I really wanted to do. Or you drop dead from a heart attack running a marathon, but it's like, this is what I was supposed to die doing. Or those guys who do the wingsuit thing and they fly into a mountain and they're just like, you know, if I die doing this, I'm cool with that, right? But if you're not cool with it, that's a problem. So can you walk us through the steps on how your mindset shifted and what were the steps to getting to where you are today?
Yeah, I mean, so much came out of that experience that, I mean, I really do need to, and it is on my list of things to do, write a book about this because there are just so many life lessons that came out of, you know, this 2-year journey. And at first it was this journey to get back to my old self. I mean, probably the first 6 months of suffering was, I just want to get better so I can go back to my own life and get back to what I was doing. And I think, you know, universe had a bigger plan. Like, I almost had to stay sick. So until I finally had the breakthrough of like, I'm not supposed to go back to that old life. And so we had to really extend this thing out so I could just keep breaking until I finally could completely let go of so much the ego and the accomplishment and the stuff that was the trap. But that's all I could resonate with. And it, because, you know, someone that grew up like the way I did, and maybe you did, and what I found a lot of top performers do is many of us come from a very troubled background. And so part of that story that's running is, I need to prove myself to be lovable. Because as a child, my parents were absent. And so I was superstar at everything all my life. And yeah, I remember as a young age, like looking in the stands, like all the other parents were there. And I was looking for my parents in the stands, like, because I would get the winning goal or whatever the case was. And the whole, you know, granted, small town, girl sports, it's not like we had a stadium full of people, but those that were there, the parents that were there, would be like, you know, jumping up and down. And, you know, and I was always star performance and straight A's and everything. And granted, a lot of it was just for me, but a big portion of it, every time I wanted my parents to be the ones in the audience saying, you go, girl, congratulations, we're proud of you. So I think, you know, that constant, that pattern, that story was constantly running my entire life. So much of my achievement was, I never was able to sit with myself just to see, am I worthy? Am I lovable? Am I good enough as I am without all the success? And what I found on, and well, you know, I just call it my Beth deadline, well, there alone in my head day after day, that was what I really had to figure out, is why I wanted to get back to the old self, is because my worthiness and value as a human being, I could only connect to that based on big audiences applauding me or telling me I'm all this amazing stuff, because I didn't feel it without that constant, you know, external validation, if you will. So again, it just kept that cycle, along with, we kind of live in this more mentality that if I ask somebody how much money is enough, they're like, I don't know, but more than I have now, as though no matter where we are, it's never good enough. There's always the next more to get to. So what that does, it creates constant dissatisfaction and lack of gratitude and comparison, because we're comparing ourselves with something out there, this next level of what others are doing and what we think we're doing. Again, is this need to fit in and to prove ourselves and be important. So a lot of that inward journey then is just going to am I lovable on my own? And if, you know, and are there any parts of myself that I want to clean up or fix just so I can feel really happy with who I am and my, you know, why I'm here. So, you know, that piece, which is kind of very philosophical, and we had to get out of the rat race to even spend time with ourselves to start coming up and thinking about these things. The other thing is, you know, combined with just really getting to know ourselves and like ourselves and love ourselves, piece one. Piece two is then, what is a good life? My definition of a good life is likely definition of your good life. And so again, it's like lifestyle design, but it's sitting and thinking. And I realized again, when I was on my deathbed, I'd created a life I hated. I mean, it served me in that I got all this external validation constantly, but it was like, is like a heroin IV or something. Like, I had to go get the next dose and the next hit and the next hit and the next hit, right? Because once the hit wore off, I'm stuck with myself and now I'd go get it again. So I just see that that can be an easy trap when we're not conscious and aware of it. And then I realized, like, man, I've created this whole life on a success money level. I've nailed it, right? Top 1% across the board. On a do I love my life level? No, my business owned me. I mean, I had employees all over the place. There was always breakdowns. If I went on vacation, my kids are like, mommy, let's go surfing. I'm like, well, let me finish this call first type thing, you know? And, you know, that was a lot of regret. It's the time I missed with my kids when they were younger, for example, just thinking, I'm doing all this for them. And it's like, no, they just wanted my time. They really didn't care. I was bullshitting myself to say it was all about them. It was all about me. So, you know, those were parts of the regrets too, but ultimately I realized, like, that's not my definition of a good life. That's the vision of a good life that others have painted for me. I've not sat down and thought of my own. So when I finally let go of my old life and realized I think I'm going to live and I can reinvent my life from scratch, what do I want it to look like? I started really thinking about it and things that were important to me. I wasn't location independent before. I had big bricks and mortar. I had 50 people that work for me. I have lots of stress. I you know, I could never leave. And so when I went to reinvent this, it's like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next, but this next version of my life, for my business side of my life, I want location independence. I want lots of time freedom. I want to be able to say yes to any experience that presents itself, you know, and then just really be able to live more in the moment. I want to structure my time that, you know, I don't work more than like 30 hours a week in these time frames so that I can focus on these other areas of my life, which, oh, by the way, that's what the money's for. The money's to underwrite the cost of living a good life. But if you don't know what a good life is, how do you know how much money's enough to underwrite it? And that's the final piece of this equation is, one, be able to sit with ourselves in the quiet space and kind of enjoy that time or that person, know what we bring to the table, what we contribute, who we are, what our purpose is here. And, you know, and really embody and hold that and be happy with that. Two, like I said, definition of what is a good life. And then the third piece is, how much does it cost to live that good life now and in the future? And that's quantifiable. So the first parts are kind of philosophical, spiritual, and the other parts kind of the practical, quantifiable piece. And then when we can start thinking about that in money terms versus just thinking, if I work hard and make a lot of money, all my money problems will be solved, which is the biggest lie of all time. It's no, how much does it cost to live a good life? And what is my financial plan, my money piece of this? And what is my relationship with money? And how much do I enjoy spending time with it? Because I want to spend time with it because it's directly connected to this dream and this vision and this intention that I've set out to create, and then enjoying the process and the journey while we're in it versus making it destination focused. So much of just this, what I call the big reveal for me, was this contrast of doing everything, you know, poster girl perfect over here and building something, one, that nearly killed me. And two, if I sat to say, is this my definition of good life? It'd be absolutely not. Even from the financial outside, it looked like I just nailed it, right? But then, you know, and having this opportunity over here to reinvent of like, okay, I've seen all these lessons. Now I get to design my life and live it moment to moment. Because at the end of the day, we don't know how much time we have here.
Yeah, very powerfully put. And I would even go back. I love that you went there, because nobody really wants to hear that message that, hey, listen, maybe this is this need for more and you get more, but it's not enough. So you got to move the goalpost and strive for more and then move the goalpost again, wherever it is. And you refer to it as an addiction. And I really do believe, you know, that's exactly what it is, workaholism, right? And I love how you said it really is about, it's not, I'm doing it all for the kids, wink, wink, right? We're part of us, we know that's not true, right? That's how my parents were. And it's like, no, I just wanted your, I wanted you to show up to my karate competition, just like you wanted your parents to show up to your sporting events too, to see that goal. And so many people say that, and I've heard people, clients tell me that in the past, and it's such a hard message to receive, I think, right? But thanks for sharing that. I wanted to even ask you, because it almost is like so many people who are high performers, it does come from this feeling like they weren't enough as a kid, right? I believe it all comes from childhood, all of it, right? All of it. Maybe part of it's genetic with our personality, but certainly how it shows up culturally or and in our routines, it's like it comes from what we went through as kids, right? And I feel like there's maybe some people who are listening who are struggling financially, and then you say, oh, it's not all about money. And they're like, oh, that's easy for you to say. I'm trying to pay my bills. And it's like, well, that's kind of almost another something that came up for me while you were talking. That's still a reflection of the, it's not enough. You can't be happy with what you have, right? And then once someone does solve that, or maybe they were born into money, right? They had a certain level of what's considered having money in our society. And then it's like going for more. Or the question is this, I've never really thought about it in terms of numbers, but with your experience, how many high performers, or what rough percentage, and obviously we're not talking about hard data here, but does it all come from that desire to succeed? Does it come from a place of not feeling worthy enough? Is that all high performers? Is it 20% or 80%? What do you think? What's your experience?
You know, I don't know. I'd have to really think about the answer. Regardless, is that it's just the awareness of what is really driving me. And, you know, if one were to look at me from the outside, Christina version one, V1, and Christina V2. You know, on the outside, am I still successful? Yes. Am I still energized to build great business, make impact, change lives, grow a really amazing business? Yes. But the drive is different. Before it was out of that not enough, more is always better, get the next t-shirt, get the next award, you know, be told again how amazing I am. So that was the energy. It was fueled kind of out of fear and anxiety and lack and not enoughness. And, you know, so that was the fuel. And I think that can work for a certain period of time, but it doesn't work forever without a cost, because that's just serving the one thing. So it automatically creates or wreaks havoc in other areas of life, like relationships, like maybe like real love and contribution in a different way. It can come at a great cost to our health. And yeah, because it's just that constant drive, because that's something that can never be fed enough. You know, it's just, it has to constantly be fed. And that's kind of that addiction piece. So now let's say just kind of nature of how I'm wired. I do love success. I do love creation. I do love growing the business, but I'm not fueled out of lack anymore. It's really fueled out of this love of, you know, it's not connected to my need for success. If it's successful, great. If not, I'm just as happy because it's serving this mission of knowing my purpose and the work that I'm doing, the help that I'm giving. And I get to work with my daughter and I get to have conversations like this. And I get to talk about this subject called money that people are kind of scared of. And like success is the byproduct of just loving the work and being in it, as opposed to it being the success is the destination. It's the love of the creation that's kind of the juice. So even though on the outside, you know, business successful, yeah. But it's totally, like I said, the source of that energy is really love, faith, passion, excitement, not being attached to the outcome, letting it organically grow into what it's going to grow into with, you know, still putting, you know, the work and stuff into it, as opposed to not enough, not enough, not enough, not enough. So we can be high performance on either side. Now, regardless of which one we're in, getting to the place where you are is good enough for today, while I'm still reinventing and creating my tomorrow, and knowing how much money is enough, and knowing money and meaning, and knowing that, you know, when we're not trying to buy our happiness, we're trying to just be happy, that it causes us to be in it. And when we're in the wealth game and not the income game, because we know how important wealth is to living a good life, you know, so when you're designing a good life, wealth is a piece of it. Wealth is radically different than income. Most people are living the income game. A few of us are living the wealth game. And if you don't know which one you're in, you're probably in the income and expense game and you're not in the wealth game. So when you start to change yourself and you start realizing that my happiness isn't the comparison or the achievement or the, you know, the one day when I get there, and it's in this kind of different space, and we're connected to wealth, and we know money and meaning, and we're not trying to buy that comparison to make ourselves feel better, we naturally actually end up spending less. Because we realize we're not out to just get that dopamine hit of that next purchase to try to validate our success, our achievement, our money in some outward expression of that. Because what that does when we're in the not enough model, we're constantly, the money piece is spending all this money to continually fit in and to impress and compare and that type of thing. And next thing we know, we're at the mercy of the money. And then we have to then that's where that grind is. It's like, shit, I have to go grind it out again today and tomorrow and the next day and the next year so that I can pay for this really expensive lifestyle I've created myself that's really oriented around what everybody else is kind of doing around me. And again, it's just one big trap that most of us are in until we step outside of it and can see this one big rigged gamed system that people are playing. It's like the Matrix without knowing, you know, you're kind of hooked up to that machine. But once you get outside of it, then you just have more money in general, because you realize like I'm so satisfied with life in a way without a lot of stuff. And then the stuff that I choose is very meaningful to this real quality of life that allows me. What we begin to realize for pretty much everyone I've worked with, it's less about stuff and it's truly more about time. And that's what wealth is a lot of people that are out teaching money, you know, it's with the yachts and the Lambos and the Gulf Streams and the thing. Like, this stuff is the, that's the measure of success and happiness. And, you know, when you kind of in this game, you realize that that's just more stuff to maintain and take care of or have expenses and, you know, all the things. And it's like, it's, again, it's about, I just want my time. I want to be able to say yes to, if, you know, Ted says, hey, you know, we're going on to this rad, you know, great friends, we're going on this rad trip to XYZ. You want to go? It's all planned. You just write the check. I'm like, I'm in, I'm game. I've got the time. I can reschedule things because I've designed my business life to organize around my personal life. And now I can say yes to an experience and hanging with people that I love and these relationships I want to go deep with, because that's where the juice is. It's always about relationship, yet we're sacrificing the most important thing, which is relating, which is feeling connection, which is actually feeling love for others and receiving love back. That's the fuel. But we're living this life out here that's robbing us of the most important human need that we all have, is to love and feel loved. You know, at this, I'm doing it for you. I'm working and making money for you. It's like, again, is that's called, that's just the bullshit meter going off. And I think so many have experienced that with our parents. And I know my kids, you know, sadly, my kids can say that about me too. But they don't say that anymore. You know, now it's different. But yeah, so it just becomes, everything gets rewired once we start really connecting to the money piece of this life puzzle.
Yeah. What I hear you saying is developing awareness of why you're doing things, developing awareness of, are you just going for more, but when you get more, it doesn't feel good, but yet you have this pattern where you just keep going and you've never stopped to really think about it. And what I would ask you is, how do you help people develop that awareness where they're in the cheap dopamine hit, or sometimes expensive dopamine hit, depending on your tastes, of course. How do you help people get awareness about that?
Yeah, so, and that's the right word, is awareness. And I have a money school, and people go through a semester really to learn money from the inside out. And people that join the school and go through it, they think they have a money problem, which almost everybody does, unless you've kind of studied money and cleaned their stuff up and done the work like anything else. You know, it's just like anything, you know, we can have relationship after relationship after relationship, and they just keep falling apart. And we point the finger at somebody else, and we realize, like, well, I'm kind of the common denominator in this. Maybe I need to clean myself up to have a healthy relationship.
Sure.
Or like with what you do in the, you know, it's like the yo-yo diet, you know.
Just exactly.
Go back to the yo-yo diet, just like the low calorie diets, like going to solve me and make me lose weight magically. It's going to stay off the rest of my life. Like, it's yo-yo for a reason. So money is the same way. It's no exception, is that it's knowledge based. It's a domain of knowledge. It's knowledge based. And if we don't know and understand money, then we're probably going to have money problems one way or another, regardless of how much money we make.
Or if we understand it the wrong way, right? With believing what we're told.
Well, culturally, it's rigged. Like what our parents and our culture tells us about money that we hold and behave with on a subconscious level day to day. If I told you it's the biggest, fattest lie of all time, and it's going to keep you in the rat race and on the hamster wheel your entire life until you radically step off and realize that you have to relook at everything from the inside out to switch the trajectory and change it, you know, then maybe that would cause us, like, all right, I don't want to be in this system anymore, but we're in a system. So when it comes to money, there's these different categories. And the first thing is our relationship with money. Like I said, a lot of that has to do with our relationship with ourselves. But if our relationship with money is out of fear, out of lack, out of confusion, out of lack of confidence, out of, you know, whatever stories, narratives we have believed, our beliefs we have about it, that we all have carried over from childhood, to your point, if we've not looked at those, we're running the same patterns as our parents and the same parent patterns as our friends. And unless we have parents and friends that have actually done it differently than what it appears everybody else is doing, we're going to wind up in the same place. But that's our relationship. And so the relationship of money, kind of from a spiritual relational place is that's the first place to clean up. You know, some people call it mindset, and, you know, that's an overused word, but I really like to say it's really our relationship. And a relationship is a much narrative mindset as it is behavior. So I can say I love you, and I can use the words and, you know, the language all the time, but you would tell me whether you feel loved or not. And how would you feel loved? One, it would be out of my words, but I can say the words and you can feel very unloved at the same time because my behavior is not back in my words. It's out of integrity. So you're the person that gets to tell me if you feel loved or not. And I'd be like, well, I tell you, I love you all the time. What are you talking about? Like, what's your problem? You know? So the relational piece is through attention. It's through time. It's through connection. It's through presence. It's around, let me listen and let me be with you and let me behave in a way that causes you to feel loved according to the way you say what makes you feel loved. But that's a whole different orientation and relationship than it is, well, I told you I loved you, like get over it. So that's, again, the behavior piece. So when it comes to money, the mood around money and the relationship about money is one out of gratitude that, yeah, I may be far from where I'd like to be financially, but at the same time, I still sit with, I have a roof over my head. My utilities are paid. I have food that I get to have at the table. I get to sit at dinner every night with my kids or my family. I have my health, you know, we've got these different things. And, you know, and being able to say that, man, no matter what the bills are, it seems like every month I'm able to cover them. I wonder why that is. But again, when we start to be appreciative for what we have and just be grateful for how lucky we really are, that's kind of this first step of this. It's more about being grateful for what we have as opposed to focused on what we don't have, which is a big piece of this change. Then the relationship piece is, if I say I love you, but I'm never home and I don't talk to you, I don't spend time with you, I always have excuses for why I'm not keeping my promises and I'm behaving in certain ways that make you feel unloved, at some point you're going to be like, there's not a relationship here, not a healthy one. So our money is the same thing, is that when we're grateful for it, these different things, we want to spend more time with it. And that's the behavior of money. So what we can do to see how what we truly believe about money is we can start looking at how we behave it, and how you do that practically is take like 90 days and look at every dollar that you've spent and where it goes and where it's gone. And that will show you as a mirror, money is a mirror. You know, if I say, hey, I'm way into health and, you know, I'm all about this health thing, but my money's showing me I drove by McDonald's 3 days every single week. My money is calling me to say bullshit. You're not, you know, you say you're care about your health, but you actually care more about convenience than health, because convenience has you going through McDonald's, and health, you know, health means convenience is more important to you than health right now. But our money can become a mirror, and we can see where we're spending places just to hit the loneliness button, or to hit the I can afford it button, or I deserve it button, you know, to these things by looking at the Amazon purchases. And, you know, these things we can see like, wow, these types of purchases are actually organized around not about my good life, not about hitting my numbers, not about being very conscious and aware and where my money's in true alignment with what I say I care about and the life I want to create for myself and others around me. So that's a really good exercise to do that. And so that's part of what we do, is we start to look at our behavior as a truth teller. It's like in your world, again, like, you know, I call it stepping on the scale of money, that, you know, in my head, I could be like, yeah, maybe I'm a few pounds overweight here and there. And yeah, I kind of, you know, had maybe Mexican and had some desserts and ate a lot of, you know, bad food and didn't really exercise that much. You know, maybe 1 or 2 pounds I'm off. But you don't step on the scale because, you know, deep down, you don't want to see what's on the scale. So you just walk around it. And then one day when you get serious, you're like, you know what? I'm tired of feeling lack of energy. I'm tired of not feeling good in my clothes. I'm tired of being tired. I'm tired of all these things. I don't care what the scale says. I'm going to step on the damn thing, deal with the truth of what it says, and then I'm going to go to work. And I'm actually truly going to get healthy for the first time. It's not about losing weight. It's about getting healthy, but knowing that losing some pounds is probably going to be a part of that. Then you step on the scale. You have your holy shit moment. It's not 5 or 10 pounds. It's, you know, 15 or 20. But it's like, all right, now I can have a strategy and I can work with someone like Ted or whoever's going to help me really now do the change, the mindset, my relationship with myself and my behaviors in a way that's going to allow me now to create this healthy life that started by stepping on the scale. So with money, it's the same thing. If we're abdicating it, if we're not spending time with it, if we're not looking at it, if we're afraid to look at the bills, if we're just walking around, you know, that's a real indicator. Because when you're in the wealth game and money is just a good, you know, important part of living life well, you want to look at your money. You want to see how it's doing. You want to see it growing. You want to have a checks and balances system that's a reminder that says, hey, I got a little carried away this month, you know, because we're not perfect. And, you know, going back to that. And then really the final piece to that practically, what I love about money as opposed to kind of other categories of life, well, thinking in the health is that if you're feeling really off, one of the first things we do is we get our blood tested because the blood kind of shows us some things we can't, you know, kind of diagnose or ascertain, but the blood, you can't see it. Right. So now we get this blood work. So we step on the scale, we get our weight, we measure our body fat content, we get our blood work. Blood work says, oh, no wonder you feel like shit. Your hormones are completely whacked, you know, or your thyroid's completely whacked, or you've got heavy metal poisoning. That's, you know, whatever the blood is telling us. But our money is our blood system of our life. So when we're checking, so we can go in and we're looking at money as labs through a profit and loss and balance sheet, which is the lab and then the lab. And then there's narrative or, you know, results in the, in, you know, in our financial statements. That's just like looking at the blood work. And when you know how to read those, you can diagnose it. It's like, and it's always, you're always balancing. Like no matter, every time I get my blood work or I do it, you know, like three times a year and then something, everything looks great except this one area, you know, it's like, something's off a little bit. So now I go and I work and I do some supplements or do whatever I'm going to do in that area. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I've got it now. I just had that one thing. Like life is, my health is perfect. And I get my next blood work. That's good. But now something else is a little out of alignment. So I call it just balancing. And that's why we're doing this as a lifestyle. Like, you know, we age, things change, you know, some, you know, who knows what's changing in our environments. So we're doing our blood work from here on out, just knowing there's probably always going to be the next little something to work on. But if you know your baselines and you're keeping an eye on everything, you're in a journey with your body and health. And again, money is the same thing. Money is no exception to kind of these fundamental universal laws that are work that says, you know, you have to be in this relationship and you have to do these labs and you need to constantly be adjusting, but enjoy the adjusting. And then it's less destination focused that I want to lose 20 pounds and then, you know, life is perfect. I never really have to worry about this again, as opposed to, no, I just know for the rest of my life, I'm going to be checking these things and hopefully just preventing or noticing something before it gets too bad. And, you know, it's as normal as, I don't know, taking a vacation every year.
Yeah. So many things there. And I kind of smiled halfway through your answer because something popped up and I want to even talk to you about this afterward, but I get people, sometimes I tell people, listen, what you need is not me. You shouldn't even be listening to this podcast. Why? Because you're stressed out about money. And if we hop on a call together, I don't want to hear your money problems. I don't know how to solve those. I'm good with solving health issues, getting you in shape, losing fat, building muscle, making it a sustainable process for you so you keep it for life. And if you're too worried about like your bills and all that, I don't want to, you won't even have the bandwidth to transform your body. And so if you're listening right now and you've even had it, hopped on a conversation and gave me some money spiel, Christina is who you need. And if you've been thinking about working with me or anyone really, or if you're living in scarcity and you know it's financial, but even coming to my podcast, it's kind of like a distraction from the real issue in your life, which is this, let's say, dysfunctional relationship with money. You don't need to be listening to my show. You need someone else's show. And maybe not Dave Ramsey, who tells you to save $5 on coffee to become a millionaire or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what he says, but I don't really resonate with the things that he has said.
Yeah, well, thank goodness, because I don't either. Yeah.
But interesting to hear you say that as well. But you need someone like Christina. And I really feel strongly about that, Christina, because I believe it comes back to what you said about awareness. Some people think they have a weight issue they're just stress eating because financially they're a mess. I can't solve that issue without solving the root cause, which is and the same thing goes with people and like who are in a very bad relationship, a toxic relationship with another person. It's not going to work. I can help them lose some weight. And I'll show them strategies better than anything that they've ever done before, but they'll still end up putting the weight back on because the stress from their relationship, it's food is how they're medicating themselves. Right? Dealing with the anxiety, because a lot of people aren't going to become alcoholics or crystal meth heads, right? But in our society, food is, I mean, like 70% of the population in the US, I mean, that's how I feel about it. The medical, you know, you mentioned something about medicine. I'm very appreciative that I can go and, I've had surgery on my eyes to improve my eyesight, or if I break a bone, I, you know, have people looking after that, how to set it. But when it comes to those other things, right? When it comes to getting healthy, it's a different ball game, and doctors are quite unhealthy usually. So anyway, kind of going off on a tangent there, such a powerful conversation today. And I want to ask you, if you're listening, does that resonate with you? Anything that Christina said or that I just said right now? Maybe the awareness is you got to start dealing with this thing, this money relationship issue, before you deal with anything else. And, learning about health, it's just a distraction.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you're saying that. What I found is that there are three life categories that are non-negotiable, in the sense of how well we take care of these three things really is directly connected to how good our life is, or how chaotic it is. But one is money. Again, we can't opt out of money. And to your point, money affects everything. Like when I was listening to that, I'm like, how many times have you done this? Have I done it? And has anyone listening said, I don't have the money to do XYZ. Yeah, do I want to get my health back and do this? But Ted, I can't afford $10,000 to hire you. So as much as I'd like to get my health back, can't afford you, not going to do it. So it is one example. But how many times do we say that over and over and over again, that we're using money as the excuse for why we say we can't change our lives for the better? Often. So that alone, if we think about that, kind of the next thought is like, maybe I need to solve something to do with money so that I don't keep not being able to improve or change or grow my life because money is the root cause of what I hear myself saying, and it becomes the excuse. And then it's just, so maybe I should work harder. You just burn out, or then you get stuck, and that's what the stuckness is. And we get stuck in all categories of life, but how much of our lives are stuck because we have this excuse of not having enough money?
I need marriage counseling, but can't afford it.
Yeah, right. All of it. Everything is. And so, people come to me like the last thing they work on. I'm like, no, come to me to be the first thing you work on. Because once you fix the money thing, and it's so easy to fix relative to health and relationships, it's the easiest thing. So it's math. It's systematic. You get systematized. You get clarity. You set up a good system. You're in your money. You have a great relationship with it. You kind of love it. You know all your numbers, then money's super simple. It's a super simple problem to solve. But it does take awareness, it does take change, and it does take knowledge. Money has rules you have to follow. Period, end of story. You have to know why compounding interest is important. And you want to know why you want to take advantage of this starting today. And if you don't know why, or you don't really know what it is, you don't have a balance sheet, you don't know these numbers, you're just never going to have enough money. Period, end of story, fact, truth, maybe not fact, but truth. So get good at money. Money's super easy to get good with. Plus I make it really fun to learn and get good with it. But that's, if it's not with me and Dave Ramsey's your jam, do Dave Ramsey, better than nothing. But the only reason why I'm not a fan of Dave Ramsey, he does some good things, especially if you have debt and want to get out of debt. But it's all about scarcity and reduction. I compare Dave Ramsey like a constant low calorie diet. It's like, you know, who can be on a low calorie diet for their entire lives and think, okay, this is really living? Who wants to be on a low budget and just be happy with it? And then, you know, it's always like, oh my God, you should feel guilt and shame if you did one thing outside of that. So it's really what that's the restriction versus it is truly about the mindset. It's a scarcity mindset as opposed to a growth and abundance mindset. So I teach you spend every dollar you make, and you are so connected to every dollar that you spend and what you're spending it on, and love spending. So I want to create this real love of spending, but it's intentional spending. It's spending that's in alignment with what you say you care about, and then creating the systems that allow you to do that on the reg. So anyway, that's that life category. The second life category is just non-negotiable is your health. And when we're younger, it's really easy to take advantage of it or not paying attention to it. But there's usually, you know, life, you know, when it comes to money, at some point it tends to be working until the day it doesn't work anymore. And I just call it the money calls your bluff. Same with health. Health called my bluff. I was in my story that I was taking care and all these things. And I was running marathons. I was resilient and all the stuff. And then bam, got taken out the knees. And then for me, the reason why I'm here today is because I was actually good at money. I had enough money to save my life. If I had to just go normal insurance and normal stuff and didn't have the cash and assets to be able to do, I would not be here today. So in my case, money saved my life. My kids have a mother. I would, sad but true. I mean, this is hard stuff to talk about. Now, was that money given to me? Was I just kind of the luck that I had a trust fund or something? No, I worked my ass off for every dollar over time and sacrificed all this stuff to have that money. That ultimately, had I done it differently, I wouldn't have been in that health crisis probably to begin with to have to use all my money. But at the end of the day, money solved that problem. Money can solve some problems, actually. Sad, but you know, it's true. But the thing is our bodies then, what I learned is that my body from a financial standpoint is my number one asset. I learned that once I was pulled out of the business game, not only was I using all of my money to try to find a cure and to, you know, save my life, it was just like a constant faucet, just drain. Money didn't matter. To me, the thing too, like when I was going through that, I didn't care about my lake house. I didn't care about my boat. I didn't care about my words on my wall. I didn't care about my business. All I wanted was my life back. All I wanted was my health back. I didn't care one. I promise this is true. I didn't care about any of the stuff that seemed so important before. All I talk to about anybody that's fighting for their life, and they have one thing they care about is getting their health back. That's it. Nothing else. It occupies your time 100%. And that's what, and all the energy goes there. And, you know, so much the money kind of affects the health, to your point. But that's the health. And so when I teach money, we have a wellness bucket where you fund that bucket to invest in yourself as money to be spent on self-care, like true self-care. And I compare that to, you know, especially as high performers. You know, we kind of think like everybody thinks this way and behaves this way and runs, you know, idols at this kind of idols this high and, you know, goes at this velocity, but not really. It's called high performance for a reason. So you look at like an F1 car. So F1 cars are designed to go full out to win races, right? And the big reward, if you win the race, can, from a, you know, money term, can be some, you know, lots of zeros. But at the end of the day, for that car to be high performance and run at that and race at that level, it needs lots of care. They're changing the tires constantly, changing the oil constantly, replacing everything on a regular basis. That car is being turned over so much. The inside and different pieces are the same, but it's a car that's being constantly, you know, read everything on a very serious basis. And so it's a lot of investment. You invest a lot more money into keeping the car racing and operable than you do just, you know, your Honda that's sitting out front. So it's another thing. And so it takes a lot of money for those F1 cars. So it's F1 bodies that are high performance. Oh, guess what? If we're running at this velocity the way that we do because we have, you know, bigger dreams and ambitions and maybe financial targets, and it does require to perform maybe at least for a certain period of time, at a certain level, then we have to put more money, just like the cars, into our body. And that's not inexpensive, you know? So I spend a lot more money on wellness today than I do on things by a long shot. So, you know, like I really don't care about the next thing to go out and buy, but if I can look at the next, you know, longevity thing or, you know, health hack or, you know, I'm buying a chili pad for my bed this week and just all the things just to be able to sleep better, for example. But again, that's the health bucket. So we can actually be healthier when we have the money to invest in our health. And then the third category is relationships. Can't opt out of relationships. We need our health to live a good life. And we need lots of love and hopefully good relationships. Part of the way we're spending too much money and we're eating too much food is because our relationships suck and we feel really lonely. Even if we're in a relationship, we, you know, if it's toxic or whatever the case is, we feel really lonely. Or if we're alone and maybe not in a partnership, we feel really lonely. And so you can just see so many problems actually are coming out of feeling detached, not connected, not feeling loved, not being able to truly give this love and spend time with others and in relationships because we're feeling tired, don't have the energy to put into these things health-wise. We don't have the money to invest in counseling or go on a trip or do the things. So see how these are so interrelated that if all three of health, wealth, and relationships are instrumental to quality of life, my thing is I want to get as good as I can at all three. And if I'm hitting a breakdown in one of those categories, I want to go find the help that's going to help me either solve that problem or to improve my level of ability to behave and get better results in that category. And I just, you know, complete by saying many times people are going to work on their health or maybe they're going to do spiritual work or relational work, personal or otherwise, and they're leaving the money piece out without understanding that money funds everything else across the board. So get good at the money thing. Love your money.
Love your money. Fix your relationship with your money. It's interesting how you bring up, you said earlier, relationships are where it's at. It's the most important piece. And I agree with that 100%. I'm not a relationship coach, but I agree that relationships are the most important thing. They're the most important thing in my life. However, like what I teach, hard to have, or what you just said, hard to have the energy to love someone, to show up the way they need, to show with your behaviors instead of saying, no, I love you. I just have a headache and my belly hurts. And right. And I feel really bad about myself. I saw myself in the mirror. So, but I love you though. Right. Or with, you know, you're so focused on what you help people with. With the money thing, you can't show up for that person because you've got this, the relationships in your life, or might be a lot of people in your life, your children, if you're not handling these other areas. So important. Christina, this was just, I feel like this is the first of maybe several conversations we've got to have about this. I feel like this is, we're just scratching the surface here, and love what you brought today. And just to kind of keep it at that level and give people some ideas to think over, let's do this. If you're listening right now and you resonated with Christina and you want to learn more about her, she does this quiz that you can find at wisemoneymethod.com. That's wisemoneymethod.com. And what does that specifically tell someone who goes there?
Yeah, Wise Money Method is my school. So I teach money and we get really good at it. And money just becomes such a happy spot in life. And that's my purpose on this planet today, is to help people love their money and have a really good system for managing it, for loving it, for growing it, for building it, and for creating true wealth and wellness in their life. Where money, life's hard enough, we're going to take the money problem out completely. So that's the school. And then I have a quiz. It's wisemoneymethod.com/quiz. And it's the top 10 financial questions most people can't answer, but should if they ever want to create financial independence. So I just invite, take the quiz and see how you score. Because, you know, if we score less than probably at 85, 90%, hopefully the next thought is there's probably some stuff to money here I need to figure out that's going to get me off this hamster wheel and get me more into, you know, true wealth creation, financial freedom, and just overall living a life that's that's far less negatively impacted by money.
Perfect. And if I want to challenge you, if you listen to this today and you listened all the way to the end and you're like, wow, you know, this is something I need to take action, go to wisemoneymethod.com/quiz and take the quiz. Take an action right now. Or again, like if Christina said, if Dave Ramsey is your person, go do whatever Dave Ramsey is offering. But take action after listening to this, because far too often you'll feel that motivation rise as you continue to listen to, say, this, a podcast like this. And then afterward, you don't do anything with it. But it feels like you did something because you learned. But that's not learning. Learning is when you listen, read, watch, and then you go apply it. You take some type of action. So that is my challenge for you if you're listening to this right now. Christina Wise, thank you so much for coming on the show. As I said, I feel like we're scratching the surface here, and I want to get you back on soon because it's part of the bigger picture of health, financial health, relationship health, bodily health that we all want. And we're not getting that message. We're getting, you know, the scarcity that you mentioned, or the low calorie diets, and so I feel like we're kindred spirits here. So thank you so much for today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. And as I said, we gotta get you back on sooner rather than later.
Anytime. You just tell me when.
Summer is almost here, and we're bringing back our free 7-day challenge again. So it's starting on June 8th. Let me tell you, our best clients, they've lost up to 5 pounds in just 1 week. No crazy diets, no insane workouts, nothing like that. But here's the thing. If you want to be considered, you need to go to legendarylifepodcast.com/challenge and apply today. We only have 50 spots available, and we're only going to let people who are serious about results join the challenge. And in this challenge, I'm going to teach you how to build your plate for rapid fat loss, how to build a strong body with a simple 10-minute workout, how to recover so that you can wake up energized and ready to dominate your day. But I want to be clear again, this is for people who are serious. Last time, I had to kick people out of the group because they weren't serious. So only if you're serious. If you're serious about making a change in your body, in your life, in your energy, in your health, this is for you. This is an opportunity for me to coach you. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, legendarylifepodcast.com/challenge. Go apply for a spot today, and looking forward to seeing you in the challenge.